This is 9/11 Free Fall.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of 9/11 Free Fall. My name is Andy Steele, and I am the host. Tonight, we'll be joined by Barry Zwicker. We're going to be talking about the Martin Luther King Jr. assassination, and we'll be talking about the man himself as well, because the holiday just happened, and I think it's important to look back at what went on in the 60s, because I see 9/11 as a continuation of that. And it's a good opportunity to do it. So we're going to go a little off topic tonight, but it will relate to 9/11 by the end of the interview in certain ways. But before we get to that, I want to cover this story, and I got a limited time to do it. This is from the BBC. I saw it on Facebook because somebody posted it. The article is dated January 21st, 2020. The title of it is France Apology After History Textbook Links CIA to 9/11. It begins, a French publisher has apologized after a history textbook that appeared in bookshops in recent weeks suggested the 11 September 2001 attacks were probably, quote, orchestrated by the CIA. The debunked conspiracy theory, they got to make sure that they say that in every article that covers 9/11 truth. They have to assert that to the audience and nobody thinks that it's a real issue. The debunked conspiracy theory was apparently highlighted on social media initially by a group of school teachers. The book, History of the 20th Century in Flashcards, is aimed at undergraduate students. On its website, the publisher said the phrase should never have appeared. This is a quote. This phrase, which echoes conspiracy theories devoid of any factual basis, should never have been used in this work. It doesn't reflect the editorial position either of Ellipsis Publications or the author, it said in French. So the publisher is groveling to the system, trying to get the controversy squashed so they can go on printing books and making money. The textbook is described as a complete course on the last century in French, European, and world history. It was written by Jean-Pierre Rocher, a teacher of history and geography and a graduate of Sciences Po University in Paris, and aimed at Sciences Po undergraduates as well as students preparing for France's elite, quote, grandes écoles. Now, bear in mind, I don't speak French, so I could be mispronouncing some of these words. Although the book came out in November, it was not until the daughter of one of the secondary school teachers bought a copy that one of them spotted the references to the CIA. On page 204, the author explains the context of the creation of the jihadist group Al-Qaeda and the, quote, quadruple terrorist attack of 11-9-2001 on New York and Washington. He then makes the following statement. Here's the statement. This global event, no doubt orchestrated by the CIA, secret services, in parentheses, to impose American influence on the Middle East, question mark, hit the symbols of American power on its own territory. The teacher immediately shared his concern on a teacher's Facebook group whose spokesman, Bruno Modica, told Le Monde it blew up very quickly. There are 122 comments. This inserted clause of his conveys a conspiracy theory you can hear in our classrooms from some pupils' mouths, but to find it written by a teacher and in this type of publication is unacceptable. A story continues. The story was picked up by the Conspiracy Watch website. And I just learned that this existed. Apparently there's a Conspiracy Watch website. They're watching you. It's all in French, so I don't know what it says yet. But maybe we can get someone to translate it or have Google do it for us. But it was picked up by the Conspiracy Watch website, which complained that the sentence falsely suggested that there was some sort of controversy surrounding 11 September. Right, there's no controversy whatsoever. There's not people talking about this. There isn't tens of thousands of people on the 9/11 Truth petition. We don't have supporters worldwide. There's no controversy at all. It pointed out that a survey carried out by IFOP in December of 2018 had found that 21% of people under 35 backed the idea that the U.S. government was implicated in the attacks and that this was the age group targeted by the textbook. You know, we did a survey a number of years ago, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it involved showing people a video of Building 7 coming down, and a majority of them said that they said it looked like a controlled demolition. That's just a side note. Article goes on, more than 18 years after 19 Al-Qaeda jihadists hijacked planes and crashed them into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and a field in Pennsylvania, a man dubbed the architect of the attacks is due to appear in a U.S. military court this week. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is being held at Guantanamo Bay and was a close ally of Osama bin Laden. 2,997 people lost their lives in the attacks. French publisher Ellipsis said the author of the textbook was keen to delete the words in parentheses and that it was adding a correction online in all books that had not yet been sent to bookshops. In a statement to the BBC, it said, opinions could, quote, of course, be freely expressed in our books, but under no circumstances can an inaccurate or unfounded fact be presented as an objective truth. So again, the company is groveling to the system, and they have to assert that there is nothing to this. Do not look at science. Do not use your own common sense. Do not question this at all, because the world is all in on the big lie, and we can't go back now. I think we can go back. I think the truth will actually make the world better. But I think this is an interesting story, because if you think about it, that those words didn't just write themselves. That doesn't happen. Somebody has to write them. So either the author did that, thinking he would delete it later, or something, or some editor along the way stuck that in there. But I love stories like this, and this is a new thing to me. They said that a lot of pupils in classrooms are questioning September 11th, and I say, good job, kids. Keep on questioning your world. Question authority, because the system is not here to help you. It's here to handle you. And sometimes it handles you into a bad place. So keep on questioning, and we need to keep up this forward progress. I love stories like this. I want to see more of them. All right, Barry's Wicker is coming your way.
The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Barry Zwicker is a Canadian alternative media journalist. He's a documentary producer and he is a political activist. He's done extensive research on 9/11 and on the MLK assassination. That's Martin Luther King Jr., which we'll be focusing on today because the holiday just happened last Monday. And I think this is an important matter to spotlight considering the troubles that we run into trying to expose the biggest crime of the 21st century, which is 9/11. And it all relates. And we've been dealing with this kind of stuff for years. And it's also just a really good time to look back on a person that really had a big impact on our history here in the United States. And I think worldwide. I think people all over the world know about Martin Luther King Jr. and what he helped to create in this country. So, Barry, thank you so much for all your research on these topics. And welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
Well, I'm very glad to be on the line with you, Andy. Very glad.
So I've had you on this show before, and I asked you to talk about your 9/11 experience. But today, since we're focusing on Martin Luther King Jr., people don't trust that official story for good reason. And that lack of trust is backed up by the civil lawsuit verdict, which we'll be getting into later on in this program. Again, 9/11 is just a continuation of this stuff. But focusing in on Martin Luther King Jr., I'd like to know your personal story around that. What were you doing, and where were you when you heard that Martin Luther King Jr. had been shot?
I got to be honest that I cannot remember that the way I can remember 9/11 or the way I can remember precisely where I was when JFK was assassinated. I also can't remember where I was when I learned about RFK and when I learned about Malcolm X. I don't know why, but anyway, an honest answer is the only answer I can give. I would say, picking up on what you said, Andy, about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s life and his assassination being worldwide, that is so true. And it's underscored in a way by a British documentary that I saw just this past Saturday Now, the documentary is called Seven Songs for Malcolm X, but it is very relevant to Dr. King. This documentary was first aired here in Toronto in 1993, and then a short time later, the next month, it was aired. It was screened in Chicago. But the reason that I mention it so early here in our conversation is that the film begins with a narration that's very, very relevant to our focus on Dr. King. The first words of the narrator are, quote, FBI report, June 12, 1964. Anonymous called at 1:40 says Malcolm X will be bumped off. Now, these words in the documentary are followed by several quotes from Malcolm X, as well as a picture of each person who will speak throughout the film. And then attorney William Kunstler says, quote, I met him just a week or so before he died at an airport, and he told me that he had a telephone call with Martin Luther King Jr., and they were going to meet and try to amalgamate their two forces, to divide the country into North and South, Martin in the South and Malcolm in the North. It would have been a great movement with two charismatic men, and I think that the government had to stop that at any cost. That was William Kunstler. And I think that just tells volumes, doesn't it, about how it was an assassination by the state.
Well, there was definitely a lot to be afraid of from the establishment point of view of what was going on back in the 60s. And, of course, we've seen all of these assassinations take place during that time period and the questions surrounding them, JFK, RFK, which I've studied in somewhat depth, not as much depth as 9/11, of course, but and then the civil rights leaders like Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., and it seemed like this country was just being shocked and awed left and right during that time period. And what's so significant, to me at least, you got to understand, I was born in 79 after these things already happened, but what's significant to me is I watch old reruns of sitcoms and things that were playing during the 70s and late 60s, and this, Martin Luther King Jr.'s death was the first instance that I saw where real life got incorporated into these plot lines. It was so important. Like, I saw a Dragnet where they were focused on the day he got shot, worried about riots and things like that. I mean, it just goes to show the inspirational power behind this person, how many lives he touched by speaking out and doing the actions that he did. Now, it's interesting, and I know that you live in Canada, not in the United States, but you can still observe what's going on in the country at that time. I read a book by Gore Vidal about Abraham Lincoln, and according to Gore Vidal, this was something that the country had been expecting, for him to get assassinated. They had been expecting it to the point where people were showing up to the inauguration who didn't like him just to see it happen. That's a lot of venom there coursing through the country, I guess, at the time. But I want to know, in the case of Martin Luther King Jr., was this a case where there was an expectation that this moment would come in some form sooner or later? I mean, were people sort of bracing themselves for him to eventually get assassinated?
Oh, yeah. I think that, I mean, when you asked me if I could remember where I was when the news came across that he'd been assassinated, but what I don't remember that, as I said. But what I do remember is that I was worried. I was worried for his safety. And if I'm a pretty old guy, I don't necessarily need to say exactly what my age is here today. but let me just say that, you know, I'm over 80. And so I've seen, you know, the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, you know, the assassination of the Swede, the United Nations guy. I've seen all those assassinations. I was alive. I was relatively, you know, young during all these assassinations. And and you know, the Swedish prime minister was assassinated. Really good people get assassinated. And I think that a key word in what you said here in asking me about this, I think a key word again is power. And you know, to go back really a long way, if there was an historical Jesus, I myself am an atheist Christian humanist. If there was an historical Jesus, there was a very, very early example of where the power people did not want him to live. And, you know, Jesus was actually a radical. That's what I think. That's what my father, who was a Christian minister, a progressive Christian minister, that's what he thought. And there's a lot of theologians who would agree that Jesus was a radical. You know, he overturned the money changers' tables in the temple. He overturned the money changers' tables. Now, the equivalent of the money changers' tables in today's world are these billionaires, the elite billionaires who have such an undue power over legislatures, so that the politicians, far, far too many of them, are dancing to the tune of the lobbyists for the giant corporations, the elite, the billionaires. I mean, just last night here in Toronto, there was an hour-long debate televised, and the subject was, should billionaires be taxed out of existence? And it was very interesting, because it was at the University of Toronto, and the public that attended was not stacked in any way. It was run by TV Ontario. It's a 50-year-old public television channel, educational. And so the people who came were kind of, they made sure that it was a cross-section of people. And it ended up that 64% at the end of the debate, there were two people on each side, two said, yes, billionaires should be taxed more and more fairly. And two said, no, the billionaire class are great. They bring us everything that's good. But at the end of the debate, 64% of the audience thought that billionaires should be taxed much more. And one of them said, look, isn't $999 million enough for anybody? They can't even spend all their money. But the thing is, they have power with it. And another thing that was mentioned during that debate is that the very wealthy own the media. And Rupert Murdoch would be a good example, and Fox News. And so that has a huge amount to say about what people think, what people get by way of information, what is questioned, what is investigated. 9/11 is a good example. It's not even official story, isn't even questioned, let alone investigated. You know, I was naively hoping that would happen way back, and I was pretty naive on that, because the media are essentially, fundamentally, the tools, if you will, of the most rich, most powerful, most influential sectors of society, that less than 1% of 1%, they determine, they over-determine what people see, what people don't see, what people think, what's the agenda of everybody every day as they have their coffee. You know, the media still actually more or less determine what people will think about. Most people still get their information most of the time on most subjects from the media, and the media are basically controlled by the elites. And I don't use the word elites the way Donald Trump twists it around to cause confusion. I mean the exceedingly wealthy people. the billionaires and like the Koch brothers and so forth. They have so much to say actually these days about whether our planet is going to live or die. So the key word is power. And so that Martin Luther King, he had a certain kind of power. It was a power based on love. It was a power based on spirituality of the best kind. It was a power based on his eloquence, his ability to communicate, his speech. And he was gathering huge numbers of people. He was impacting them. And then, of course, he became concerned about more than civil rights, which was a huge thing to be concerned about, but partly or even signally through the work of Dr. William Pepper, who showed Dr. King the photographs he'd taken in Vietnam. Dr. King realized he must become anti-war. So he was anti-poverty, and he was anti-war, and he was for civil and human rights. This put him right in the crosshairs. Well, then when Malcolm X started to fall away strictly from the Nation of Islam, and he also expanded his vision. He was eloquent. He was inspirational. He was charismatic. And he went around the world and met leaders. I mean, I learned this in this documentary I saw on Saturday. And he met different leaders in India, in Malaysia, in Europe. And he was always a great listener. This is what they said of him. He gave people their full attention. He really listened, and he absorbed what he was hearing, and he was willing to change his mind, to expand his mind, to develop his ideas. And so he developed, as they said, past being concerned what's happening in Brooklyn, and he was started to be concerned about what's happening in the whole world. And so those two leaders, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, were both growing spiritually, mentally, intellectually, emotionally, socially, every way. And then they were going to join forces. Well, no wonder that the powers, again, the word power, the powers that be couldn't stand that. The powers that be are afraid of the power of love, the power of understanding. The last thing they want, by the way, is peace. You know, my father was always for peace. That was the kind of a preacher he was. They cannot stand peace breaking out. Can you imagine what would happen to the U.S. economy where there's, what, $1 trillion a year goes to wars, past, present, and future? What would happen to the U.S. economy if there was serious peace? I mean, it would be a disaster initially. For all the corporations that profit from wars past, present, and future. So Martin Luther King, I was worried about him. People like him in Canada, there was a revolutionary called Louis Riel. They hanged him. And this is what happens to people who are genuinely honest and charismatic and for peace and justice. The establishment has always hated them, going right back to Jesus Christ. You know, and I don't say that despairingly, but I say that it's time that we understood that's the big picture. And it's time that we defended the people for peace, whether they're famous and eloquent or not, or if they're just ordinary people, more or less like you and me. And somehow we've got to collectively undermine the power of those who are super wealthy, super influential, super powerful, because their value system is one of death. It really is. And you can see that with global climate change. It's becoming more, that's going to be some sort of a clincher. It's kind of, do you know the film director Errol Morris?
No, I've never heard of that person.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Errol Morris is a documentary filmmaker, and he did recently a documentary called American Dharma, D-H-A-R-M-A. It's a word from philosophy. And it's odd because the person he interviewed, a one-on-one interview with Stephen K. Bannon. That's what his documentary is about. And there was a Q&A. He's in California, too. It was by Skype. And there was a Q&A after it. This was there. This was screened just last week. And so in the Q&A, Errol Morris was asked, you know, what is the feeling you get from interviewing Stephen Bannon? And Stephen Bannon was quite forthcoming about his thoughts, although they were very confused thoughts, as Morris said. But what Morris answered to that questioner was, he says, I the world feels apocalyptic to me. He actually said that. And then he said, I'm thinking of moving to Canada. But anyway, I've been reading books besides just riffling through An Active State, and then that excellent book, The Assassinations, you know, by Probe Magazine. That was about the assassinations of JFK, MLK, RFK, and Malcolm X. And then I've also just recently read a book called We Are the Weather, Saving the Planet Begins at Breakfast. Another book called The Uninhabitable Earth by David Wallace Wells. Another book called Humans, A Brief History of How We Fucked It All Up. And, you know, these books just, over and over again, they show who's holding the power and how it's going to kill us all unless we manage to somehow prevail and undercut the highly militarized elite that's just interested as the chief of the Nuremberg war crimes trial. A guy named Ben Ferenc said, we needed a lot less stabbing and grabbing and a lot more caring and sharing. And the future does not look good, Andy.
Well, I'll tell you what. In every system throughout world history, there's always going to be some strong men manipulating things. It's just human nature that always goes on. Now, the stronger systems weaken the power, or rather the ability of those strong men to do an awful lot. There's always going to be some manipulation going on, but you can kind of taper it down. We don't have that now here in the United States. We seem to let them run wild and do what they want, and we have controversies that are allowed to be talked about on television that would put people at odds with each other. But I noticed that, like, because we have a very polarized country right now, I noticed that when I just tell the truth based on whatever I see, and it's going to make everybody angry. You know, sometimes I'll take a position from one side, I'll take a position from another, and it's not based off of any ideology. I just look at the facts of the situation and say, hey, this is the facts, and it does not make people very happy. And I think the truth tellers out there are the ones that get crucified, essentially, because everybody's got an angle, everybody's got an agenda. The thing that set MLK apart was that he didn't seem to get corrupted by his power, his prestige, his fame. He carried his message forward, and as far as I know, it stayed pretty pure. And what gets me, too, is that the FBI was actually harassing him in the years previous to the assassination, sending him letters, pretending to be from supporters, telling him to kill himself. I mean, this was the COINTELPRO stuff that came out during the Church Committee hearings. And to me, it seems like this should be considered a state crime, something that should have stopped the presses, should have made this country fall to its knees and pray that it never happens again, take the steps to make sure it never happens again. But it still goes on. I know this not going to get into it too deep at the moment, but it still goes on to this day, trust me. So it's just amazing what somebody endures on top of the racism, on top of everything that he had to do and the stress of leading a movement. He's got to deal with the government pulling all these dirty tricks on him. So I think that really shows the endurance of this human being and why we celebrate him to this day. And I just Googled because I wasn't exactly sure how old he was when he died, and apparently he was 39 years old. I'm 40, but I consider that close enough. I can just imagine, what if this was your final year? This is where everything stops. So it's not a life that was allowed to be completed. Now, describe the events of the day he was shot. A lot of people may not know that. I don't think we do a good enough job, at least in my school, covering this. First, officially, so we can get that down on the record and then tear it apart. According to mainstream history, what went down that led to Martin Luther King being killed?
Well, of course, it was James Earl Ray. Just plain and simple. And that's all there is to it. The lone shooter, typical scenario that the security state sets up. And I believe that's the answer that you would expect from me, right? I mean, this is, it seems relatively well known to a number of people that he was asked to move from the room that he had in that motel to a different room, which was more exposed because of that balcony. When he'd previously visited Memphis, he'd always had a small number of black police officers to accompany him for security purposes. That small group of officers was told they were not needed that day. There were so many things that were set up that showed the careful planning that went into it. And the planning went back quite a long time, the same as the planning went back with JFK. The national security state, or whatever you want to call it, has pretty well endless resources. They lay many, many plans. It was planned to bump off JFK in Chicago when he was going to be in a motorcade, and that just didn't work. There was just, it just went awry, and then they just moved it to Dallas. They always have many scenarios they can work on. And that was certainly true with Dr. King. There was something that was interesting to me when I was in New York City. I think it was around 2006, and on an anniversary of 9/11, and I had lunch with, there were four of us, and one of them was Dr. Pepper. And what I remember he said, and this stuck out in my mind, I don't remember that much about the lunch altogether, but one thing that was burned in my memory was that Dr. Pepper said that he knew something he would love to share with us, but he absolutely could not. And of course, we were curious and said, well, you know, at least tell us a little bit. No, he said, I cannot even hint at what information I have or why I cannot share it. And so somehow I got the idea he was talking about 9/11. But it turns out, I think, like as Craig McKee suggests, and I agree, that the secret that Dr. Pepper was carrying with him was the identity of Lenny B. Curtis. And Lenny B. Curtis recorded a deposition for Pepper that the shooter who killed MLK was Frank Strasser, Strasser, of the Memphis Police. And that Pepper needed to protect as confidential for fear of Curtis's life, who gave him Strauss's name. And then Pepper could not reveal it. He could not risk Curtis's life until after Curtis passed away in 2013. And then Dr. Pepper could reveal that that's where he got his information, and it all held up. That was the guy who actually did it. I had thought it was a police officer who was a sharpshooter. His last name was Clark, and I was wrong. That was an idea that came up earlier, you probably know. But it wasn't Clark. It was Strasser, who was a terrible racist. Terrible racist. He never had the a second of conscience about it. So the planning to do in Dr. King started at least 1 year before he was done in. And you remember how James Earl Ray was a petty criminal, and he actually went to Canada. He tried to, once he got named, he split, and he went to the UK. But anyway, they caught up with him. For a time, he was in Montreal, and he met a mysterious guy named Raul, R-A-U-L, who sort of became his pimp, you know, in criminal activities. And that Raul was what led Ray right to go to Memphis. He had gained his trust enough that Ray went to Memphis. He tricked him into going there. And that's why Ray was in Memphis that day, although he, of course, was not the shooter. He wasn't anywhere close to where the shooting took place. So it's a shame to me that after all these years, the general public, in this country anyway, and I believe in your country, doesn't really have hardly any of a hint of the true executioners of these four great individuals. And that just shows the power of the media. Omission is a huge power. It's not usually recognized. The power of omission. You know, when you fail to say something or hint at something or investigate something or question something or mention something, it might as well not exist. And when you multiply that out by millions of listeners and readers and viewers of the media, then things can disappear. They're called hidden histories. There's a lot of books that start with the words, "the hidden history of," and rightly so. And I've got one I'm reading called "The Hidden History of the Korean War." And virtually nobody has any idea about how that war started, but it was started by John Foster Dulles and General MacArthur for sure, and it was done to support the corrupt people they supported in South Korea. Anyway, there's no end of the hidden histories, and Dr. King's is one. Do you know what are the current poll results when people are asked how they feel, what do Americans believe about Dr. King's assassination? How many of them question the official story, do you know?
Well, I was going to get to that because I wasn't even aware that there were questions about the official story until I woke up to 9/11 and went down this whole path of exploring other things. And I would have to say I was like in my late 20s, early 30s possibly, when I started knowing about the civil trial and everything that followed that. So I've never looked at any polls myself. I would guess, though, considering my own educational experience, probably not a lot of people. We celebrate these folks. We talk about what they did. Then they die. We get a lone gunman as the patsy, and that's the end of the story. And they build a statue, and it's over. So I would say not very many. But do you know the poll results?
Well, I don't know what the polls show. We do know that with JFK, there's a stubborn, quite large percentage of people who don't believe the official story. It's up above, I think, 30%. And it's really held steady all these years. And I guess there's so many people who questioned it when the Warren Commission report came out, and it was so fishy. You know, the Warren Commission report, the members of the Warren Commission, and then their report, it just really didn't hang together properly. And then, of course, people knew, about the grassy knoll. The propaganda, crowd comes out and laughs, makes fun of the grassy knoll and everything. But a lot of people knew about it. They knew about where the shots had come from. There was physical evidence that was as plain as the nose in your face. Kennedy's head went backwards. You know, he wasn't shot from the back, from the textbook place. In spite of all the dirty propaganda, the lying, the sneaky, sophisticated brainwashing, there were a lot of people who were still thinking for themselves. And then a series of people who knew about Kennedy's assassination kept getting bumped off. And, of course, that wasn't in the mainstream media, but people who were already suspicious said, geez, why is this person suddenly fell off a bridge? Why did that person suddenly fall off a window? You know, how come that young, healthy person has had this heart attack and so on? And so then those people then have children and they tell their children about it. So that the lies have long histories, but so does truth have long history. And if you've got a significant fraction of the people who don't believe something, it's really hard to squelch it completely. And I should know about poll results about Dr. King, but I just didn't think to do it. When there's a conversation about this that comes up not as often as it should, and I'm asked to be a resource, and then I think someone once said, there's never time to prepare properly, but there's always time to prepare. or you could call yourself underprepared. But I think that a huge lesson to be taken out of this, and I don't want to repeat myself too much, is that the mainstream media certainly continue to be squashers of the truth, omitters of the truth, a lid on truths, that to me is not a matter for despair, but it's a matter for anger, ongoing anger, that such large historic events that actually changed history, and changed it not for the better, to say the least, that the truth about these events, assassinations and other things, that they remain unknown to most people. And most people have to, go about their everyday lives. They got to go to work and everything. They've got a lot of stuff to think about. And if there's no one around to wake them up, it's very unlikely that they'll stumble across the truth. Even with the internet, you can stumble across the truth with the internet, but it itself is less and less reliable. I noticed that even just in the last 48 hours, I did two television commentaries about Dr. King's assassination. I think I did them around the year 2000. I have to dig out my old scripts for Vision TV. But anyway, then someone took those two, someone I don't know, and without my permission, took those two commentaries and blended them into one and did a pretty good job, actually. So it runs about 6 minutes and 14 seconds, my video, so you can get it on the internet. But what I did was I thought, well, I'd like to let a few friends know, because it's Martin Luther King Day, that I did this these commentaries and that someone blended them into one. And so I thought, well, I'll send the link to this to these friends. And the first one I sent it to was Craig McKee, who, of course, has been on your program several times, I believe. And so I sent him the link, and he emailed me back, and he said, you know, that link doesn't work. Well, the thing is that somehow that link got changed. It was inside an email from me to Craig, and that link got changed in the trip. I kid you not. So then I started to do two or three searches myself for my own video, and I used one link. I mean, there's different ways of finding it. Of course, you can put my name in, but who's going to do that? So you know, I was putting in things like JFK, Martin Luther King assassination vision TV, or I tried different things in my browsers. And so I came up with another one. Somebody picked up my video, and without permission, but it didn't bother me. They put it on their website. So I clicked on it, and it ran. So in as I continued to check out what the hell's going wrong, that I can't find a link that I can send to people, and it won't get changed. So I went back to this site where it had run, and I clicked on it again. It ran for under a minute, and then the video ended. The video just simply stopped. The audio continued. So, a long story short, even accessing my video is being messed with by the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, whoever does this stuff. It's being messed with these very days as we speak. But I've given you a link, and I hope it, Andy, I hope it'll work. You could send it out if you would, and you could say, this should work. And then they could watch my video if it does work. But this is the kind of thing that's going on all the time, and I mean, it's happening more and more. I mean, they're becoming more extravagant about messing with us on the internet. And you know what happened with Craig, where his whole site was bounced by WordPress. He had no way to appeal it. It was done without notice. They just bounced him. And that was an informational crime committed against Craig McKee, who worked so diligently to build up his website, Truth and Shadows. It was an informational crime. You know, he should have had the right to sue them in court for a large amount. Anyway, he lost a lot of stuff, but then he's managed to get back, you know, on the net. But this stuff shouldn't be happening. This is the kind of stuff that they claim happens in communist countries like Russia or China. But it's happening here. It's happening this very day. It's happening to my stuff. And I'm pissed off about that. You know, and I hope that your program never encounters this kind of disruption, or maybe it has already. What's been your experience?
I personally have not had any issues. Now, I don't upload every single Freefall episode to YouTube. I probably should. I just haven't. I go up on SoundCloud. They have not given me any issues. I'm not aware of any recent issues with AE 911 Truth. And it's stuff, but I sort of feel like I'm watching the Black Plague hit every other neighborhood, and you just know it's going to be in our door at some point. So we've taken precautions, we've taken steps to not disappear in the event that that happens, and sort of like an emergency plan from the government. Just stay tuned if it happens, and we'll give our supporters further instructions on what to do, because we know this is a threat. And I mean, it gets into another discussion about the censorship, but I think it's all related. And you mentioned about how this feels like a communist country, and I don't think it even boils down to whatever IST or C type of ideology you live under. I think it's just when evil people get in charge of things, they will do things like what you are seeing. They will suppress information. And to me, it's a very clear-cut case of truthfulness versus a system that is being held together by a lot of, and I could say another word, but I won't, by a lot of lies. You watch the corporate media now. I mean, just a couple weeks ago, during the whole dust-up with Iran, I heard Rush Limbaugh saying on the radio, "It's that simple. We are the good guys. It is that simple." And my joke is, yeah, it's that simple-minded. I understand. But it's not just that simple. I mean, the world is a very complex place. There's a lot more that goes on than what people see. But when you watch the corporate media, it's almost like it's written and designed for somebody with a 15-year-old maturity level, intelligence level. And as a result, you have a populace that goes about life and goes about the affairs of the world with that kind of mentality, like some kind of teenager, you know, posting stuff about, "We're going to turn this place into a parking lot." Really? You're going to bomb some women and children because of something that happened between two people that you're not even involved with to begin with? It's just people don't really think that complex, and they don't really think in terms of what happens if these things get out of control. What happens if we go to war with Iran and Russia jumps in? Oh, you know, they got a missile that can take out an area the size of Texas. It ain't gonna be very nice if that gets fired at us. They don't think in terms of these things. They can just irresponsibly shoot their mouths off because they have this assurance that, hey, well, it's not up to them ultimately. They're not the president. They don't have their finger on the button, so they can shoot their mouths off as much as they want. Well, the problem is that a president and world leaders come from this populace, and you have kids being raised from this populace. George Carlin had a very good bit in one of his routines, and he said he doesn't like to complain about politicians, because where do they come from? They come from our American schools, they come from our American families, and he does it way better than I can lay it out right now, but the problem isn't politicians. This is the message he gives. The problem is us. You know, look in the mirror, because these politicians come from somewhere, and we're the people that lend our support to them, even if it's just turning our eyes away. And this is why I focus so much on 9/11, why I just zero in on the Twin Towers and Building 7, because it's science. I mean, you can't argue with free fall. You can't argue with its significance. I mean, there's people that will try. They make fools of themselves. They're pretty self-assured in their arguments, in their little echo chambers and skeptic forums and whatnot, but no, they sound like fools. And because the majority of the populace wants to believe people that say that there's nothing more to 9/11 than what we've been told, you know, they just sort of give it a pass and don't think twice about it. But it's just a clear-cut case of science, something that we were taught as kids that you cannot argue with. There's just certain facts about the universe, physics. And to see science overwhelmed by political agenda, by the desires of the state, is so Orwellian to me. Again, you got to put your focus on this one big issue, at least in my view, because it's so hard for them to argue with. They want to suppress it. And getting back to the censorship issue that I went on this diatribe off of, yeah, it is happening. It's happening slowly. It's an algorithm, which means that they've got computers that can do their dirty work for them. And we just have to endure. I have a feeling that truth will win out in the end. And maybe I'm too optimistic for my own good sometimes. But it just seems to me that when people work hard, that when they get behind the right cause and they don't have a specific agenda behind it for themselves, they're just doing it because it's the right thing to do. I believe that the wind blows a certain way sometimes for people. And I also believe bad people shoot themselves in the foot before they're through. So I think that we just have to endure. We have to find new ways to communicate with each other. And the best way, in my view, is to walk away from the system as much as you can. And this goes in every area of life. If you want to be a singer, stop begging to the billboard companies to sign a contract with them. Go out and just produce your own stuff. Go on SoundCloud and do it. Connect with other people doing similar things or people who can back you up. If you want to be an actor or an artist or anything in that realm, do that. Don't go begging to the system that'll just use you and make a fool out of you and spit you out in the end. Same goes in terms of business and So, you know, we can do these in small steps in our own lives. And don't give up on the 9/11 truth issue, because it's so important. And when you talk about this, you spray paint "Remember Building 7" all over the agendas of the people that you're going head-to-head with when they try to push a new war or some kind of civil rights-stealing legislation. And if you put this in enough people's minds, they will remember. And you can see them become more skeptical as we move forward in our national history. Now, I'm curious, Barry, I mean, you kind of mentioned this, and I mentioned this, but just to highlight this further, how much of a disservice does it do to our populace, and what does this say about our educational system that we really just give a very Saturday morning cartoon version of history to the kids, and really to the adults who study it, that we just kind of breeze through these things, we end it at the moment that they die, and we give them a lone nut as the culprit, and then move on. It's like you're not teaching people how to think, and what kind of future are we going to have from a population that just blindly goes along with this stuff? That's a concern that I have. What's this going to lead to? Do you think that there's going to be a rebellion against it from the next generation that's sick of this, or do you think it'll just kind of keep on limping along like we've seen in past decades?
Well, I think it'll be a combination. I have a granddaughter. She's just turned 16. And she tells me that everybody in her high school class knows about global climate change. They have some important idea that it is really, really serious, and that not nearly enough is being done about it. She also said, and I had actually gone to asked to be a speaker at her high school at one point, and I did raise the question of 9/11. I did it, you know, carefully. I sort of didn't have permission, but the students listened, and one of them, I was gratified, spoke up, and he said, "You know what? My dad says just what you're saying." Right? And it's good to get a little backing like that. It kind of normalizes what you're saying. And so if you were talking, I think, earlier also about what can be done is stay away from the sort of the power centers and go about finding ways to do things yourself or with others that you associate yourself with. And, you know, there's a word for that. It's called community. And if we could be a community of communities, which, for instance, 9/11 Truth is, you know, there's firefighters for 9/11 Truth, and there's lawyers for 9/11 Truth, you know, and there's teachers for 9/11 Truth. And so it's a series of communities that form a larger network of communities. And somehow there's a certain power in that because people will select from other members of their community points which are memorable, points which particularly make sense, points which ring true, you know, which you will hear from your neighbor or from somebody, you know, in your book club or whatever it is. And, you know, you were talking about the collapse of the buildings of the WTC. And I when I'm doing public speaking, I do less than I used to, but when I'm speaking to a group, I'll say, "Did you realize that those towers," and I'm usually then speaking about the Twin Towers, "say, do you realize that they both came down in less time than it takes a telephone to ring twice?" And that really catches people's attention, something like 10.3 seconds. And so that gets people thinking. And I think what you want is more critical thinking. And anyway, when I say that, I then say, "But it wasn't just those two towers. Do you know about the other tower, the 48-story tower, Building 7? Hands up, you know?" Well, there's still a lot of people who don't know. Well, I say it also fell in less time than it takes a telephone to ring twice, but it was not hit by any airplane. You know, and so they'd have to go and dig out this contra bullshit, you know, that it was diesel fuel or something. They'd have to go and seek it. But, I mean, the bald facts are alarming. They're shocking. They're amazing. And they're memorable. And so we all need to, I guess I'm speaking now about people who are, shall we say, in the media or who are authors, journalists or whatever, radio hosts, just need to keep working, as you say, keeping on.
Well, that sounds really good, and it's been a very fascinating discussion today. As I always say, they only give me 1 hour on the network, so we are at the end of that hour. Barry, thank you so much for coming on today, sharing your wisdom, your thoughts on Martin Luther King and on 9/11. All the best to you. Appreciate you coming on 9/11 Freefall.
Thank you again, Andy.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio and every other Thursday night on BBS Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele saying have a great week and good luck.